Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is John Trooper.
This is Kate Prusser.
This is Julio Rodriguez.
Produced by
Evan James Audio.
This is
Lookout Landing Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Lookout Landing Podcast. My name is John Trooper. I'm joined today by just one of the usual crew here, although I myself have not been particularly usual of late, so I thoroughly appreciate Shay, as well as C. Trent Rosenkrantz, everyone for stepping up and getting in here. But today, Kate Prusser is at the park on her actual journalist. So we are delighted to have Evan James Audio. I've cursed right out the gate here, and I apologize. I remembered immediately following that particular endeavor, as it were, that we were hoping to do less of that, so my apologies. However, Evan, how are you feeling? We're recording this Friday afternoon, which I know you're not always supposed to do, but in terms of dating the pod, but I always think it's valuable for people to understand where our mindset is chronologically whenever they are listening to it. So how are you doing here?
I'm doing good. I've been feeling really good about the Mariners. You know, just a lot of emotions in general over the past couple weeks, not just for the Mariners, but for Seattle sports in general. Just lots of stuff going on, and that's cool. That's what we like. We want it to be exciting. We want it to be fun. We want it to be high stakes. And yeah. It sure has been.
It sure has been.
But yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. I think that I'm glad it settled down a little bit. We wanted to do this earlier, but there's just been so much going on, both in terms of the games, us wanting to react to every game and not being able to logistically, but you know, trying to pick the right spots to talk about stuff. Because obviously we could be very easy to talk after every game, but there do... It does feel like there have been some natural kind of ebbs and flows to this, and this feels like a good moment to talk about it before tomorrow specifically.
Yeah, I agree. It's very frustrating to to look at the games that we've seen this week. I think there's been some really, really great writing on the site, and I'm obviously thoroughly biased in that regard, but you know, I can't, you know, express enough, even with losses like Zach Mason and Kate obviously have recapped. Nick Vitalis, Isabel Manassian have written, you know, on those games and on the experience of watching this here, which is pretty brutal, but it is, it's the, you know, it's the stakes that make it sting, like you said, Evan, right? It's what you get sometimes when you're here. And I mean, I would love to hear how you felt about this, but like, it's almost been more frustrating because they've really looked like they belong.
Yes. Yeah. No, 100%. I was thinking about that. Really what I wanted to talk about in terms of how I'm feeling about the way they played is I feel great about the way that they showed up in Houston, frankly. This team can play much worse than that. Like, I've seen it. They can play better. It wasn't their A game, but I would call it like their solid B plus game. Yeah. They brought to Houston and they came out 0-2. And like, realistically, you know, people want to split hairs and talk about how important a 1-1 split would have been, and it would have. But I think what you've seen over the last week is, and I talked about this on the, it must have been three pods ago now, but the last pod that I was on, we were reacting to the Blue Jays win, and I said it took every inch and every ounce of that team's talent to get there and to beat the Blue Jays, whom they were very evenly matched against. And they did. They are just ever so slightly short of Houston, and it's very... You get that when you're watching it because they have outpitched us. Even when we hit Justin Verlander, which in and of itself feels like a small miracle, and I have a hard time demanding more of the Mariners' offense than that, honestly. And I sleep well knowing they lost that game, but they hit Justin Verlander.
Yeah.
Even if I have other nightmares, which we'll get to. But yeah, I feel like they showed up to play. And the great disappointment of the 2001 team is that conspiracy theories about certain events aside, things felt like they conspired for the Mariners to come out very flat in that series against New York.
Yeah.
And it felt like the team that was so remarkable and set records all season and was the most winningest team of all time didn't show up in the postseason. And that's the great disappointment is, they didn't show up. We don't really know what that team would have looked like. And we do know what this team looks like in the postseason, and they look a little short. Would you say that's a fair assertion?
Yeah, I do think they, you know, they are not like, they're not the best team in this playoff group. Like, nope. I think, you know, Amanda Lane, who was formerly wrote for LL and has, you know, is now doing writing of her own and longer form capacity, as well as some freelance stuff, wrote about that 01, about that 2001 team for Baseball Prospectus. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's one of their articles that is like free with, you know, you just need a like base login. You don't need a paid subscription to read it. But it's really, I mean, it does tell that story, which is like, there just was so much that took that team out of it. And this is not that circumstance. It is indicative of how little playoff experience that not just the team, because I mean, most of the team, several people on the team have ostensible playoff experience. They even have a World Series player, you know, a player who's been to the World Series on their roster. But like, as a fan base, there's simply no one with less playoff experience. And like, this is, you know, this is unfortunately what it looks like, where it is the Mariners won 16 fewer games than the Astros in the regular season. And they have come out and have played just about as well as you could ask them to, and the Astros have been just a little bit better. And I saw a much worse Seattle Mariners team sweep the Astros in four games in Houston in 2018. So you're not going to tell me like this series is over. But it is, you know, it is just a circumstance of, you know, a couple little things have sort of highlighted that they don't have the margin for error. You know, they need to be pretty much perfect to beat a team like Houston. And they don't necessarily need to be perfect. Like you said, that B plus is right. Like B plus, A minus, I think is how they played. I would say that like first game against Toronto was an A minus to an A game, right? Like the 4-0 where like they came out gangbusters and then mm-hmm. just Luis Castillo like locked it down. Like, yes, they could have added on more, but like that's pretty much exactly ideal, you know? And the insanity of the second game, like that was not a perfect game. That was some nonsense, but you know, they are playing and I mentioned this, literally, I was like, it is as frustrating as anything to like suddenly look around and see like Cleveland is compelling, but so, you know, has very clear limitations. The Yankees look very, very limited. You know, they have clear like problems like they have all year. Like Seattle might be the best team that Houston faces until they get to the World Series this year.
Absolutely. They might be the second best team in the American League and a top 3, 4, 5 team overall when you come down to it. And that's very, yeah. very high praise for the team and the expectations mm-hmm. for where they're at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, realistically, what we have seen is, right, the highs of Houston are higher. They have the best starting pitcher in the series. They, you know, that's Verlander. They have the either second or third best starting pitcher in the series in Framber Valdez. I think Castillo's a little better than Framber, but, you know, it's sort of what you're looking for. And then, you know, they have the best hitter. They have Yordan Alvarez. And they have, what, probably 3 or 4 of the top, you know, 7 or, you know, the top 6 players, excuse me, top 6.
They have, I would say they probably have 12 of the top 15 players in this series, right? Like, and you don't want to be that cold about it, but like when you're looking at the lineups, you're like, I don't know if I would take just about anyone over what they have. And yeah. obviously Julio is like the big exception, and Ty France, who has been a little disappointing in his own right of late. They're just such a good team. They hit yeah. so well. They're pitching to finish the season better than ours and yeah. one of the top overall in the league. And like, what yeah. are you going to do? They don't do anything poorly. They do everything right. well and better than you. And the one maybe hypothetical strength that the Mariners have leaned on so hard is the bullpen, which is really the thing that's come unglued in the yeah. losses of late. And I think we should stick there for a sec, because when I'm watching this bullpen, and I don't know about you, John, but they look out of gas to me collectively, and it's not showing up in terms of the velocity, but they are not sharp collectively right now.
Yeah, I think it's, to be frank, it is, I mean, Munoz, they have ridden so hard, right? He's pitched in every playoff game so far, and yep. he's pitched in either the highest leverage moment or certainly like against the best hitters in the team, you know, that the other team had.
In three of 4 days, back to back to back, essentially as well. It's not just the high leverage, but he went, yeah, he
well,
went.
Well, not quite, right? He went Friday, Saturday, which is back to back. And then he had Sunday, Monday off, and then Tuesday,
okay,
Wednesday off, Thursday. But yeah, so like there's rest that it's okay, but it is still, I mean, top tier leverage each time. And you know, it stings because he is their best reliever, and he's also 23
and didn't pitch last year through a right, third right. of an inning coming back from Tommy John surgery. Right. So yeah, this has been playing with fire for a minute here.
Yeah. You know, and that's sort of the thing, right? It's like a lot of the decisions look frustrating, but if one or two of them work out, it doesn't really kill you. You know, if Munoz gets past Bregman, right? It was Bregman who hit the two-run homer. Yep. You know, and, you know, doesn't one, that's two runs back, and also it's not letting Alvarez get up, or at least it's a couple more hitters before Alvarez gets up again. Mm-hmm. In the, you know, in game one. In game two, I mean, again, it's, you know, just not having quite his best stuff. And I mean, he had almost 100 strikeouts. Now he has, in the playoffs, he's gotten 102 strikeouts in 69 and two thirds innings. Like, that's a lot of pitching for a reliever, and a lot of pitching for a 23-year-old, like you said, who threw half an inning or two thirds of an inning last year. Who like wasn't supposed to be called up, but I can't remember. It was some weird context in which like they had to call him up because somebody was hurt, or like either Justice Sheffield or Yusei Kikuchi. Like, I don't know. It was something wonky, but it was like, I guess we're calling up Andres Munoz at the last moment here. Mm-hmm. I've really appreciated Matt Brash, who's been pretty nails.
Probably been our best relief pitcher, definitely in the postseason at this point. Yes. He's the only guy who's thrown clean innings in the
Yeah, I mean, outside of that, like, first game for Munoz against the Blue Jays. Yeah, like, it's true. But yeah, you know, I mean, it's tough to go, like, all their starters outside of Robbie Ray have thoroughly done what, you know, what you could ask of them, right?
Yeah. Even Castillo, like, losing that game, giving up three runs in six innings to Houston is a good start. That's absolutely a very, very competitive start.
Absolutely. You know, like, they had to get three or four, you know, they had to get four runs in that game.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, in retrospect, but like that was what we'd said before, or at least, you know, had been discussed before. Just didn't, you know, that didn't quite work out. You know, JP hits that liner right at somebody instead of anywhere else. So Julio's double scores nobody instead of scoring two.
Mm-hmm. And even the inning before that, the Mariners had an Eugenio Suarez line out and a Frazier line out were very hot off the bat and very easily could have found grass and did not.
And scored two. Would have, you know, both times would have scored two. Mm-hmm. Julio's grounder up, like, laser up the middle that Altuve made a sensational play on.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that would have scored one. It wouldn't have been the difference. But, you know, you keep them run. You know, it's another run and you make them throw more pitches. And, you know, I mean, again, it's not that they are just happy to be there, and like that's a huge cliche. It's also something they say, and it's like good, but also like we watched a lot of this team, especially a lot of this team when they were not really 100%, and they are as close to 100% now as they really have been.
Yeah,
this year. Yeah, and
very much so.
You know, and some of that is like limited by, you know, Sewald's tired. Sewald's gone so many innings over the past year and the past couple of years, and I think he is just a tough match. It's a tough matchup for him. They don't have a pitcher that matches up well against Yordan Alvarez. Nobody does, but particularly, you know, when you are intentionally planning ahead that if you're, you know, if Yordan Alvarez comes up in a key moment in late in the game, you're going to bring in Robbie Ray. That is perfectly reasonable and also a sign of like, this is a specific limitation for the team, right? They don't have that lefty power arm. They don't have that good matchup there.
I heard Jerry acknowledge that very specifically, and I thought it sounded like it kind of clicked for him too, that they didn't really need that to get here. You know what I mean? They didn't need a lefty specialist to get them to this position, but they got here and they suddenly found themselves outmatched against a specific player. And really, that's oversimplifying it, because as we said, they tried to pitch to Bregman and Bregman hit them anyway.
Yeah,
and you know, people got on base in front of Alvarez, and even despite all that, the Mariners couldn't get outs with their bullpen around those guys. They routinely peg players, and they had several walks in those games. So yeah, it's like, it's really easy to have this come down to like, oh, you, Alvarez beat you. And it feels that way because, my God, does it feel that way? Like, it just does. It's how it feels. But it isn't like that. And I think that the Mariners were competitive in every pitch of this postseason so far, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's just a fact. They were in it. Julio is on second base the other night when they lost. And they lost on the final pitch, a walk-off. It's like, what are you going to do? That's what we can ask for. We can ask that this team plays and is in it, and they were.
Yeah. How are you feeling about tomorrow or the game on Saturday?
I agree with your assessment pre-pod. You said that it's likely the team comes out hot tomorrow, wins in front of the hometown crowd, and loses the next game. I kind of think that's a likely outcome. I agree. I hope so. I would love for them to win in front of Seattle just so people can have that experience, even if I already feel like they've given us more than we maybe should have even expected so far.
Sure.
I'd love that for the fans. But I have, and I think Durs had a tweet about this earlier, I have made my peace with this being it, if this is it. And I consider it an overwhelming success. And I am also okay with them not playing more baseball because I recognize that when it comes to Munoz, when it comes to Julio, when it comes to Ty France, some of these guys, you just, you know, could use a rest. Some of these guys could use a rest. I don't really want George Kirby pitching anymore. Like, I'm so excited to see him pitch in the playoffs tomorrow. But if the Mariners are done, I'm really stoked for him to have some time off. Right. Like, that's okay. So, yeah, I'm at peace. How about you?
I am. I want him to get a win. If nothing else, I mean, I would like them to reverse sweep, to, you know, run the gauntlet and come all the way back and go to the ALCS, of course. But
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I think that is a very good point of like, they have been in it every single moment of every single game. There's not been a, like, the closest that they have been to out of a game was game two against the Blue Jays, where they were out of it. Like, they were out of it and then they weren't. Like, and that's the sort of thing that I love, is that they have given you cause. So I would like to see them do one more dance at least, because it would be very sweet to almost like a teaser for hopefully what is to come, and also, you know, a showcase of like how far they do still need to go. Because that's what I feel when I've been watching this series, is like, In both of these games, I think it's reasonable to think if you played literally the exact same game and you know, same contact, same, you know, obviously you can't do that, but it was in T-Mobile Park, I think the Mariners are at least 1-1 here and maybe 2-0. Like, that fly ball, you know, Alvarez's homer Alvarez's single is a flyout. You know, many of the hits and caroms and things, you know, go quite differently. The Mariners have benefited a little bit from that. There was a play where Alvarez like leapt like a silhouette against a wall in left field, and there was a double instead of a routine flyout. So that it's certainly not it just a one-way street, but it is like that's what you need to, that's the team you need to be better than. That is the team you need to outpace. And they're not losing anyone massive next year. You know, they, the biggest loss, so to speak, I think that you could reasonably look at for Houston is saying, oh, well, you know, maybe Verlander finally slows down a bit, but like,
sure doesn't feel like it.
Sure doesn't feel imminent. And like, yeah, like when they're losing folks and it's mostly people that aren't playing or like are tertiary, like they're losing Michael Brantley, who's been hurt all year. They're losing Yuli Gurriel, who is their worst starting player other than their catchers. Like they're losing their catchers, which is not a big deal. Like it's really, you know, you're seeing money jump, obviously. Like Bregman's salary goes up to $30 million from 13. So it's not like they're just gonna suddenly have like infinite cash to expand upon. But like it's gonna be pretty much the same team next year. So Seattle has to not only internally improve, which I think they will, but recognize Houston probably internally improves too, right? They've had a good year, but a lot of their best players are reasonably young. Kyle Tucker, Alvarez, Bregman and McCullers are very much in their prime. You know, this is not a team that's going to fall off a cliff from where they are now just by waiting a year. So Seattle has to go out and take it from this team. They have to go out and improve. But I would love for them to show at least once, like, what winning a game here in Seattle in the playoffs feels like. And I think, like, it's going to sting. It's going to sting if and when they lose this series, no matter when. But having that memory of, like, I want to feel that again and again. And I want it to be game one. And I want it to be game two. And I want it to be in our back pocket that they can come. They have to come home to us next year. That is what I want. Because you know, this is very much, I think, going to be a legit rivalry. You know, I think the Mariners can make it. You know what Atlanta and the Mets had this year. I think they can make it what, you know, this year, I think it was very much the Padres and Dodgers for what's happening. And I think it's interesting almost to see that mirror image, but the Mariners haven't yet dipped their toe in really to, okay, now we're really serious. Now we're going to get a Manny Machado. Like now we're going to go sign Carlos Correa or Trey Turner. Aaron Judge. I don't think they will necessarily sign Aaron Judge, but you know, getting one of those big pieces to make it so that their lineup is as scary as Houston's, because that's what it can be if they are making, you know, that, and that's how they have to get there. Is they have to add one of these big players, I think.
Yeah, and they're not a small step in that direction is what I would say. And we talked about this really all last year and through the offseason, which is they need high upside players. It's not sufficient to add a Sam Haggerty Demo duo and be like, well, there's five wins, even if that's what you somehow managed to spin out of it, which is kind of almost semi-miraculously what happened. They need, and I think Kate said it best, and I wish she was here because she would reiterate this. It felt like, still feels like as we're playing this, I realize I'm talking about a lot of this in the past tense because I have mentally, I'm a little mentally accepting of it. But she said that, you know, it felt like Alvarez was better than our Julio. Their star players beat our star players when it came down to it. And we don't have to get new star players, but we do need to add to that depth because, you know, when it came down to it, having Carlos Santana with a bad hamstring trying to be the big thump in this lineup wasn't going to do it. And like that, it was okay because that was already a backup plan of a backup plan because it was supposed to be Kyle Lewis and it was supposed to be Jared Kelnick and whatever else.
Jesse Winker.
Yeah, we're so whatever the plan was, we're way past all of that now. But yeah, like the team. I'm almost, like I said, part of the reason I'm ready to turn the page is because I'm excited to see what they do next because I know that they need to add to it. And like you said, the Astros aren't going to fall apart, but the Mariners are for sure not going to fall apart either. And their biggest departing pieces are like, you know, Adam Frazier potentially, or maybe trading Marco or something like that. So they're in a position to do better by adding as well. And they're in a position for our own superstars to grow and to be better. And I think that in terms of the future and us versus the Astros, what you're hoping is that those guys are already past peak and that Bregman has already been his best self and that Correa, or excuse me, and that like Alvarez is never going to be as painful as he was this year. But that Julio is just getting started and that Jared is really just especially getting started and that this was a jumping off point for Cal. And even if some of these guys aren't drastically better, they're already incredibly good, right? And you see that from like Logan. If Gilbert is just a three-win pitcher, awesome, right? Like we can want more from all of these guys, but they all were really good this year and we'll take that.
When it's that is the other thing is like the Mariners and Astros, I think where they are closest is in the pitching staff, is that like they both have young, powerful, like consistent, hopefully long-term healthy and dependable starting pitching. And that's also, that's a huge part of how you kind of can coast, not like truly coast, but like that's how you rack up those additional, you know, 2 to 3 wins a month that you need to have is by not giving away games by having to do bullpen starts or having to do, you know, I mean, Bergman.
Giovanni Gallardo.
Right. You know, like the Mariners have had so many really bad, number 3 starters or number 4 starters or number 5 starters. Like it's been very obvious how they have, you know, let things slip away. And this year it was so different. They had Chris Flexen and they had Marco Gonzalez, who were not impeccable, but they were totally reasonable. And they had, Castillo at the top, where it was like every time he went out, you felt like the Mariners are probably going to win this game. It literally doesn't matter who they're facing. There are only like 3 or 4 pitchers that they're going to match up against and feel like the Mariners are at a disadvantage in the league. Like that's amazing.
Everybody pitched all year. We have 4 starting pitchers pitched the entire year and they swapped out the 5 spot, obviously for Kirby, who himself pitched all year, which is nuts and has not, I believe that hasn't happened for the Mariners since 2001. I'm pretty sure it's the last time.
They had a specific year and I think it was 2002 or 2003, and they are the last team. They were the last team, not just like Mariners, but like in league history to only have 5 starting pitchers.
It's a very rare feat.
And like the Mariners had a couple, departures, right? Like Matt Brash was the starting pitch, was a starting pitcher in this rotation at the start of the year. So like he moved out of it, but like, it really has been. They've been very fortunate, and they're not going to be quite this fortunate health wise.
Sent down in the middle of the season and never came back. He's like the only major departure. Closer for Miami, pitched for us last year. I should know his name off the top of my head. I'm an idiot.
Drew Steckenrider.
Thank you. I kept thinking he's a dinosaur and I couldn't place the name. the Stegosaurus. Drew Steckenrider and Casey Sadler are the two missing Mariners pitchers. Everybody else was healthy all year with very minimal exception. Yeah. I mean, like Diego Castillo had like a 10-day stint or whatever. Yeah. And that is bonkers, especially when you consider the year prior, the Mariners went through like 14 pitchers in May or something like that. So,
Yeah, it is hopefully going to continue that they are healthy and that they are, you know, and they have young pitchers. You know, it's not going to be so, you know, they don't have extensive injury histories per se, and they do have more pitchers coming up too. So hopefully, you know, if they do run into issues like that, like they'll have Emerson Hancock next year knocking on the door. They'll have Bryce Miller and Taylor Dollard, you know, helping stretch that depth. But all of that is to say, like, they can absolutely put themselves in position to, like, to be a very, very high floor team next year. They need to raise the sort of menace level of the lineup. And Winker, you know, if Winker was what Winker had been, I think they are in that position. I think it's really hard. Like you said, I mean, Kyle Lewis and Kelnick not fully panning out or not necessarily consistently panning out. Stung, obviously, Kelnick has actually done, like, reasonably, you know, down the final stretch here.
He's looked fine. The numbers still suck, but he's looked fine. He's hit a lot of hard balls that haven't landed, or that that haven't landed. And I feel like we've said that about him a lot since he's played in the major leagues. But at the same time, I do feel more encouraged than whatever it was we saw prior this year in particular.
Yeah.
I think that Jesse Winker is probably, like, the biggest question mark as far as what do they do and how do they see him fitting in with the team going forward into next year, because he's a really interesting bat if he can hit, but he didn't hit all year, and he I don't know if they'd ever want him in the outfield again. So
I don't
we sure don't we as fans would not like to see that, but they may not have a choice. And those are the only players who they don't have definitive answers on, right? Kyle Lewis, Jared Kelnick, who we feel very much safe saying is going to play for the team next year in some capacity, whether he's, I assume they give him a starting job out of spring training, which they did this year again anyway. So I think that he's going to be here, but Kyle Lewis, Evan White, Jesse Winker, and to a much lesser degree, Marco/Chris Flexen, one of those guys. Those are the question marks, but every other player on the roster really has a reason to be here and was good, right? Like Chris Flexen and was good, and Sam Haggerty was good, and Dylan Moore was really good. And I feel good. I feel good about most of where this is.
It's a solid, it's a very solid foundation. It is the most encouraging season and forward-looking. I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast or if there's just been a conversation, but, like, not to be too businessy or inside baseball vis-a-vis baseball, but, like, the fact that this team has extraordinary cost certainty going forward, it is the type of thing that really sort of makes me encourage that they actually will go out and spend that money, because they don't have to necessarily worry about, you know, trying to figure out, well, what are we going to do? You know, what's the arbitration situation going to be here? What's this going to look like? What's that going to look like? Like, they know what they're paying. They're top six starting pitchers. They know what they're paying every single starting pitcher that they're coming back with. And realistically, yes, I would love it if they went out and signed, like, Chris Bassett, but they can come back with the same starting rotation, and I think that's pretty much fine. Like,
yeah,
they can come, like, they're going to come back next year with Marco Gonzalez, with Chris Flexen, and those can be their sort of five, six starters, and work through it with the younger players that they have in the farm. And that's fine. They have cost certainty at center field. They have cost certainty at shortstop. They have cost certainty at, if you want to consider Ty France going into his first year of arbitration, then, you know, meh. But like, Ty France is going into his first year of arbitration. He's not going to be super expensive. So
he's a very interesting discussion for a different pod. But what do you do with Ty France? Has kind of over the last 24 hours been marinating in my brain quite a bit. I really am torn on what I think about that. But we will deal with that another time. But yeah, in the outfield in general is pretty cost controlled, because even if Mitch is leaving, you do theoretically have Kyle Lewis somewhere. You have Jared, you have Julio, and you do have Winker under contract for at least another 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you have
Trammell, like
Trammell.
Not that I don't want, you know, Trammell to be first or second string plan, but like, again, you know, that's the sort of thing where, yeah, exactly. Like Suarez, like you said, so like you're looking for one middle infielder upgrade, and then you're looking at
a bullpen piece,
or maybe, you know, moving some people around for another outfielder, right? You know, you're looking at a little bit of consolidating to like get a little bit of more certain production. And that makes it really, really easy, right? It's and none of these players are making, I think the highest paid player next year is going to be Robbie Ray, just like it was this year. No one's going to be making more than like...
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
$21 million, and then, or what is it? Yeah, it's $21 million, and then you have nobody else making like more than 17. You've got like $17 million for Castillo. You've got $11 million or so for Suarez and JP. Like, it's very, very reasonable that they can either go big on, and this is my preference, for them to go big on someone like Correa, who I admit I'm leaning a little bit more increasingly into the redemption arc by having him come and help the Mariners vanquish Houston. That is, I will say, definitely on my mind. And that he's like only going to be 28. Like, that's who you want to send your money towards, 28 and a consistently great hitter. Like,
yeah, he's really good.
Yeah.
He's real good.
Or Trey Turner, whatever they want to do there. There's going to be money, and they don't have to worry about like any real, like, albatross type contracts, quote unquote, that they have had in the past. And again, like, I'm not going to give them that in terms of like Nelson Cruz contract worked out great, Kyle Seager contract worked out great, Robinson Cano contract worked out great, even like obviously,
which is off the books this offseason as well. This is the last year we're paying for that. So, yeah, you are correct.
There's so much potential, and watching this team, even as it has been, and I'll say this, I guess, I have not gotten to actually watch much of this round of the playoffs, because crazy, turns out if you put a game at noon, I am very happy for my many friends who have either like desk jobs or work remotely, work from home, or, you know, you are a student, you don't work, you have a job that is, you know, service industry or something that's night, that is not in a 9-to-5. Very happy for you. My typical schedule is 10-to-6. So this has been and specifically like completely unavailable to like look at electronic devices from like 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. So this has been a real poke in the eye of a series, but it has meant like I've gotten to watch the first two innings of every game more or less, and those have pretty much all been great. And then I've gotten to check on game day or like occasionally listen on the radio. And that's how this series should have been watched. I cannot recommend strongly enough some distance. That said, I think, you know, this last game should be a celebration of a really good season that I think, you know, portends great things, portends the 2020s being really, really good for Seattle Mariners baseball. And I cannot wait to watch more of it, and cannot wait for an off season that hopefully they take this gift, this opportunity and run with it.
Agreed. And I think that a lot of the casual fans are going to take, if we lose, if they will take that defeat hard. But I think that the listeners of our show, the gigantic nerds that they are, sorry, but I know you're here. I know you've been listening to us, nerds.
Evan's got the statistics on our listener numbers. It's mostly it's like, you know, it's like 30% people from Seattle, you know, Pacific Northwest. Like weirdly, like 8% folks from Lithuania, and then the other like 62% is just nerds. And it just weirdly, it doesn't have a geographic. It just says that.
It just lets us know that all these people are huge dweebs. That's what it tells us. But if you're listening to this podcast and you're plugged in enough to know what we're talking about, you should feel so good about the Mariners, because this was a banger season from the get-go, from Julio making the team out of spring training to the team making it as dramatic as possible, trying to fall out of this season in May, to the 14-game win streak, to Julio winning Rookie of the Year soon to come, breaking the playoff drought, a playoff series sweep. It's a sweep. We won two games. They won zero. It's a sweep.
You know what would be fun?
What would be fun?
If the Mariners win Saturday and Sunday, even if they lose on Monday, they will have had a winning record in the playoffs this year.
That would be pretty cool.
I'm sure it's happened before. I'd thought about that like just very recently. I'm like, that's a weird thing to be possible. But, you know, I love it.
It would be appropriate for them of all teams to have such a record, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't want them to get swept. I really want them to take it to Houston and take it to McCullers, who's been such a thorn for them. And I like of the Astros, McCullers is a player I genuinely love, and I really, much like Correa, I can't wait till he's, and Springer, really, I can't wait till he's not an Astro.
Yeah.
Bregman, I will loathe no matter where he goes. But, that's just like, it's something I really want. And like, you know, you listed off so many things, and I just was thinking about like, Julio's been so good. Like, you're right that Yordan has been, better. Yordan has
a hitter,
obviously. Yeah. Well, and like, I mean, no one's been better than Yordan. Like Yordan's been, Yordan has fucked.
He is the best hitter in the American League right now, other than maybe Aaron Judge. It's those two. And Mike Trout, who was injured all year and no one else. So,
it's brutal, and it's heartbreaking, but it is so good to see. Like last night, Julio Rodriguez was the Mariners' potential final out. And all he did was, against the best reliever that Houston had, crush a double off of the gigantic garage doors out in left center field and keep them alive. And every out, like he's had a few strikeouts, right? It's been like four strikeouts in 20 plate appearances. It's like, not bad at all. Like, 20%, very, like below league average. All he's done is, I think every single bit, I think he had one pop out, or not even pop out, but like he had a fly out to right. I didn't see it, but I remember I like checked the velo and I was like, oh, that's not that impressive. Pretty much everything he's done has been lasers, 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 lasers at people, lasers at holes, lasers at
gaps. He has the hardest hit balls in every game. And like overall in the postseason as well, he's like three of the top five spots.
Like double and a triple in game one against Houston off of Justin Verlander and a walk, I believe. Like you can't ask for more. And the fact that like it's his first chance and he's so, I mean, like it's never a concern to me that he's going to be intimidated. It is only ever a concern to me that he's going to be too hyped. And I think we saw that at times during the regular season that he would get so pumped and so hyped for big moments that he would overswing or he would, you know, like just do a try to a little too much. And
he had some rookie jitters here and there, not extreme, but they were there.
Well, not like not even, I mean, I guess jitters, but like it doesn't even strike me as nerves. It's like a desire to do something extraordinary. Like he's so like,
it's an aggressive when he needs to be passive. And that's true of all young hitters in particular. Mm-hmm. You saw that with Trammell when he wasn't hitting well. You saw that with Kyle Lewis when he came up after the concussion. Like when they're pushing it, they're swinging at stuff they shouldn't. And Julio didn't really do that like from the get-go. As soon as he flipped the script there in April, he was good. He was just a major league hitter from there on out. And that was pretty much the end of it.
Yeah. And I mean, all he's done is go in the playoffs, 250, 400, 500, 153 WRC plus, you know, just
don't crushing. Look at Jordan Alvarez's WRC plus.
I'm not going to. I haven't. I listen, Evan, full disclosure. The
first number in it is not what you expect. I promise that.
Is it a three? Because that's, higher, I would assume it's a three.
It is at higher least. Than a three.
Yeah, that's fair. It is like hysterical. It's like I watched Luis Castillo get him to like pop out, and I was like, "Yeah, I guess to hit 309, you do have to get out at some point." Because that's always what I look at, and like you know, like the you know what was his you know regular season. His regular season OBP was 406. So like he's getting out more than he is not. Now, in the playoffs, he's not. In the playoffs, he's got a 5-6 OBP. But, like, in theory, you know, that is what people do. In theory, even the best players are mostly getting out more than they're not.
He has 185 WRC plus over nearly 600 plate appearances. That is spicy.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Yeah, you're gonna get a better offense,
Robbie Ray's,
right? Well, but like that's the thing is like the, you know it is sort of like at a certain point you can only do so much, or you gotta you know you can look at a hurricane coming at you, and you can say either I'm gonna build a really big boat or I'm going to buy a house somewhere else. Right? Like, I mean, I don't want to make light of actual hurricanes. That's not an option for most people. But like the Mariners have the option to, you know, try any number of pitching things, or they can say, screw it, we're signing better hitters, and next time we'll be winning 10-5. And then, you know, and then we'll hope, you know, Jordan can have room for another solo homer and we'll hopefully still hold on to the lead. Right? You know. That's that sort of thing, right? It's like they came into this year, they wanted to prove it without actually spending money, you know, and so they came into this year with the 22nd ranked payroll, and you know, Houston's been here for a while. Houston's, you know, spent that money to have a have a top 10 payroll, have a top 5 team. And I hope Cleveland can rest Shane Bieber and just really screw with their heads or something. I don't know. Or you know, or Aaron Judge goes, I don't know. Aaron Judge is too big to be a goblin, to go goblin mode. He's going to go.
He's a frost giant.
Yeah, he's going to, yeah, go Frost Giant mode.
Chris Young lineage of Frost Giant.
he might be a Storm Giant. I'll be, if we're going, you know, real deep on it. I'm glad to hear that you are feeling more at peace. I am not at peace quite, but I'm a little closer. And right now I really want to win. I need a win, and I will feel that sensation. I think will carry me if they can get at least one win this weekend. That'll carry me through quite a bit, and I think will be valuable for them.
I agree. I think psychologically, I would like them to beat them one time. I want them to have that reward for how well they played.
Because that's the thing. Yeah, that is the thing, right? They haven't played like they're just obviously worse. They have played well enough to win a game. They haven't, and that, you know, that it's fucking base. That's baseball. It's just that you're not going to take all the game. You know, they've led more innings of this series by a good margin than Houston has. And they've lost both games.
Yeah, sometimes you're going to win on the bat of Adam Frazier, and sometimes you're going to lose on the bat of Adam Frazier. Yeah. And it's just how it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm at peace. And I'm at peace with how they've played. And I wouldn't, if they had come out in that first game and gone down 0-7 and Verlander had just kicked them all around the field, I would have been upset and not happy. But they hit Verlander. Yeah. Castillo pitched well against Houston. You literally... I'm not interested in asking for more than that. That's all that I wanted. And I do want to win. I want to win for you. I want to win for the fans. But I really love the way this team played this year and has played this postseason. And we should be happy. And this is a celebratory podcast for how the Mariners played this year.
I'm so excited to play Houston less. Good Lord, the balanced schedule. Oh, well.
And there's not a shift next year when we come back. Like, we might get to see Jared have, you know,
just yanking
or six more hits a month, something like that. Like, that sounds pretty cool. Yeah.
We'll see. Here's hoping. All right, Evan. I know that we'll talk again soon in the next day or two. Depending on what happens, hopefully it will be some kind of potentially shock and awe of their performance against Houston here to send them back to Houston for a game five, potentially.
That would be something.
But if not, we will talk about... Talk about the season, talk about the series, and talk about, you know, what we are looking forward to one way or the other. And also, you know, talk about the playoffs, because it's been a pretty neat playoffs thus far. It's very strange because I was talking with Isabel Manassian about this, and like, we're so used to watching the playoffs at this point with, like, very much at ease and, like, loving it. Because, God, the MLB playoffs are so good. Like, there's so many things MLB screws up and, like, the timing is miserable. But, like, MLB playoff games rule. Like, it's so exciting, especially right now where it's, like, there's a lot of games and it's flawed teams. Like, the Phillies are... taking it to the Braves, who objectively are thoroughly a better team, but like, screw it, you know, they're just a big bunch of no defense having boys with a ton of power and a dream. Like,
yeah, think about how things turned around for Alec Boehm, man.
An absolute core piece every Philadelphian would like battle fight to the death on behalf, because he said he hated, and this is a quote, it's not me cursing, it's a quote, he said, I
Yes.
And then he was like, I'm sorry. I just was really frustrated. And then every Phillies fan was like, it's okay. We hate it too. And we love it. And we love you. Like, what a great team. I'm watching Kyle Schwarber, an outfield of Kyle Schwarber and Nick Castellanos, and some poor center fielder who knows he has to cover 90% of the outfield, should also not be their center fielder himself.
Did they find the only two outfielders in baseball worse than Jesse Winker out there? Like, man.
It's Brandon Marsh. Brandon Marsh is good. Brandon Marsh is good at center field. He's not good at baseball. No, I mean, certainly. No, they went all dingers. All dingers, all vibes, like wild vibes and no glove.
Jack Sorensic style.
100%. No, this is Dave Dombrowski saying, y'all screwed up. You should have let Jack Z cook. watch this. And then people only sort of have an idea of what he's doing. But
they just extended their interim manager, who's one of the playoff series now. They're a wild story.
Thompson? Yeah, no, they're nuts. It's hysterical. Bryce Harper just clubbing the ball. They are a delight of a team. They are, I appreciate them because they are without any pretense. They are exactly they are fully chaotic in a completely different way than from the Mariners, where it is like, they could literally anything could happen at any given time. Usually really bad, and then they might come back from it with massive dingers, as opposed to the Mariners, who I think like do nothing, and nothing happens either way in a game, and then suddenly they make everything happen all at once. The Phillies are constantly exhausting and then then suddenly exhilarating. So I am excited to watch more playoff baseball. Hopefully that includes the Mariners. But if it doesn't, I recommend you pick a team, and I also recommend specifically that you pick the Phillies. So that's my soapbox. Evan, do you have a secondary team yet already, just in case?
No, I mean, my bracket got blown out in the first round, essentially. So whatever it was I was hoping for, we're past that now. I would like the Astros not to win.
Yeah, that'd be
choice. That's pretty much it. I'd like us to win. We're still where we're at. I would still absolutely like us to win. So
that's a brave choice. All right, gang. Well, thank you all for listening. Hopefully, if anyone's listening here can get out to the game, you can have a packed house and, really make Houston feel it. And have a blast and hopefully get a win, get that experience, which is so worth it. We'll talk to y'all soon.